summer has come close to doubling, which has caused me to think a little bit about wintertime specifically on my farm. And having kept sheep essentially wild on an island for, well, since I think it was 72 that my grandparents started this, I don't have to buy hay for those sheep. And so lately I've been thinking about all the other animals that I raise and wondering, you know, are there systems that I could be implementing that would allow me to do this in sort of a broader way? And it came to my attention recently that Cape Lehave Island, and this is input, I guess, that I'm looking for. There's sort of a hearsay locally that people used to graze cattle on Cape Lehave, that people used to be able to harvest firewood, used to be able to harvest seaweed and marsh hay and things like that. And I'm really curious about that. I guess I'm interested because I also heard recently that Cape Lehave is sort of something is changing to the effect that it's becoming conservation land, which I'm like 100% for. But there was the small part about people being able to graze livestock on the island that I thought, geez, you know, this is one of those super quirky rules that seems to be in place right now that if it disappears, it's probably never coming back. So I just wanted to explore that and ask those questions and say, like, hey, you know, I've met people in the community recently that within their living memory have seen cattle on Cape Lehave Island. I know it's a doable thing. And this past winter, I thought, I wonder if I could do that. And I guess part of me thought, you know, this seems like the kind of thing that maybe I should just do it and not say anything. It's a 2,500-acre island, and nobody's even going to notice. But part of me is also thinking, I wonder what kind of barriers might be thrown up if I were to just boldly go ahead and do this based on the hearsay of a perhaps hundreds-year-old law that I don't know anything about. So that's why I'm here, I guess, is to just say, like, hey, this is on my radar. I know things might be changing. Is this a viable option? You're not going to find somebody that's more concerned about the ecology on Cape Lehave Island. It's not, you know, my intention certainly isn't to go out there and put as many cattle as humanly possible and make a big profit. It's sort of like more from the perspective of I have three cows. I wonder what would happen if I did this. You know, what effect would this have on the land out there? You know, from the perspective of having managed the sheep on West Ironbound, or being part of it at least since I was probably 7 and being solely responsible for it since I was 20, I've seen a lot of changes over the years, just observing that to the flora and fauna. I've been a volunteer member of the Kingsburg Conservancy. I was part of the process to help conserve that land. I guess I'm coming at it from a perspective of conservation, also from a perspective of food security, because I am someone who's, you know, I live in a community where I see people struggling more and more all the time to feed themselves, and I've been able to feed between 30 and 50 families per year off of the farm products that come from West Ironbound Island with a yearly input of a jug of gas. You know, that's about it. That's all it takes to get me out there, and I'm just curious to know, you know, what else is possible. So, anyway, I don't even know who to talk to. Is there, you might be able to say, hey, this person's in charge of Cape Lehave. They can tell you what to do. Go have a private meeting with them. But that's kind of where I'm at right now, a little bit in the dark.
I believe our CEO has an idea.
Sure. So thanks for coming this morning. On the Engage MODL website, there is a page on the Cape Lehave Island. And if you have specific questions about the nature of the conservation easement or what may or may not be allowed, our Director of Recreation, Trudy Payne, behind you in the black, she'd be able to answer your questions. We are in the process of moving forward. The province had introduced legislation to permit it to a conservation easement through the Nova Scotia Nature Trust. Mm-hmm. So that is in the works. But if you need any information or background information, go to our website, and if you have specific questions, Trudy Payne would be happy to assist you.
Okay, that's it. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you. I did help with a bunch of youth to help corral your sheep on West Ironbound at one time. Yeah. Okay, so we're going to move on with our agenda. Are there any changes to the agenda? Councillor Hubley.
I would like to remove the item that I added for the renaming the portion of the Logan Road to remove item 10.2, please.
Certainly.
Thank you.
Thank you. Do we need to have a motion to remove anything? No? Okay. All right. So could I have I'm sorry. Go ahead, Councillor DeLong.
Just a question. I received a change to one of the motions, and I'm wondering if that needs to be part of the... No? Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay. Is there any other changes to the agenda? No? Seeing none, can we have an approval of the agenda? Approved by Councillor Moore. Is there a seconder? Seconded by Councillor DeLong. All those in favor? Thank you. The agenda has been approved. Let's move on to the minutes of February the 20th, 2024.
So moved.
Thank you. By our mayor. Seconded by Councillor Vino. All those in favor? Minutes have been approved as well. All right, so we're moving along nicely here. We're at our business, and do we have our first presenter in? Arthur, Sager, could you come up? Do we also have our second presenter here as well at this time? Okay, wonderful. So I just want to remind both of you residents who are presenting to us today that you both have 15 minutes to present and a few minutes for councillors to ask questions to clarify anything that you've been talking about. No decisions or commitments related to your presentation will be made during this committee meeting today. Please state your name and the community you're from and let us know what you're here for.
Yes, good morning. My name is Arthur Sager. I live in Pence. Before we start, can someone tell me what I'm supposed to do? It's nice.
And do you want me to increase the brightness?
No. The increase the what?
Brightness.
No, it's bright.
Okay.
It's cool.
And all you have to do is use this arrow as you move your slides.
Technologically wonderful. Thank you. Okay. Good morning. Good morning, Madam Mayor and councillors. My name is Arthur Sager. My family and I have been residents of Lunenburg County since 1976. I think that's almost 48 years. And we've endeavored to participate and contribute to our community. My wife, who's behind me, does a lot more than I do now. But when the recycling facility first opened, Susan encouraged her friends to tour it and learn more about the facility because she was so impressed with the idea of saving the world. I spent 16 years with a company that designed and built processing equipment for the oil and gas industry around the world. And this was equipment that was installed at the wellhead and purified natural gas as it came out of the ground to pipeline specifications. Our contracts range from $2 to $11 million U.S. We built big, complex equipment and entire gas processing facilities. And I'm here today not to sell you a new piece of equipment. I'm here to help you solve a big and growing problem. The landfill portion of what we older people refer to as the dump long ago reached its capacity. A major and costly activity that remains is dealing with the organic waste and managing the lagoon where the septic pumpers deposit their waste. I don't know where the sewage sludge goes, but it too is organic. And a huge additional problem, of course, is smell. The three waste streams, green bin compost, septic waste, and sewage sludge, represent an opportunity for the municipality and its two municipal partners to do something significant to really reduce greenhouse gases by totally eliminating methane and CO2 emissions. And I mean totally. In doing so, we can create enough pure methane gas to power most of the vehicles in the fleets of all three member municipal units. We could power the buses used by Lunenburg County Wheels, and we could use renewable natural gas to power some of GE's garbage trucks. In doing so, we'll reduce the operating cost of the facility significantly and just about eliminate the smell. And we can do all of this at no cost to you, zero. So here are the slides. What do I push? That. Okay, so I'm going to go through this quickly. Whoops. I'm going to go through this quickly because some of it's quite technical, and you've probably all looked at it before. This describes who we are. The mission statement, we're committed as a company. Although I'm retired, I've been dragged back into the world of business by my partner, Bill Famulak. We're committed to revolutionizing waste management by harnessing the power of biogas. We envision a world where waste is no longer a burden, but rather a valuable resource. And these are the markets that we serve. And this is basically a general thing about food waste in Canada. There are 35.5 million tons annually. 58% of all the food produced in this country goes to food waste. And waste management challenges include landfill overflow, greenhouse gas emissions, and environmental pollution. And there are two ways to deal with this. You can compost it, or you can use anaerobic digesters. And that's what we're talking about here. So biogas production and subsequently biomethane as a renewable fuel source includes vehicles, power generation, injection of natural gas into the pipeline infrastructure. We don't have pipeline infrastructure. We could, if we had enough gas, we could replace some or all of what Michelin is trucking in, what Irving is trucking in for Michelin, but you don't have enough waste right now, probably never. It produces few odors, the high temperature destroys pathogens, reducing the risk of contamination. We can reduce 99.5% of the, we can recover 99.5% of the methane. We can capture the carbon dioxide, and we can sell that carbon dioxide to companies like Air Liquide, who will upgrade it and sell it to food processors and to whomever uses carbon dioxide. And this process will create organic fertilizer, which can be sold. And the numbers are there. This slide talks about biogas composition and anaerobic digestion. I won't go into the details, but as I said, we decided on the name of a company called 99.5 Inc., because it really expresses what we can do. Bill, my business partner, designs elegant, beautiful, very efficient gas processing equipment. This is just another gas for him. And he's incredibly detailed in his analysis. By doing this, we would reduce the waste transportation costs because some of the stuff here, I understand that maybe the sewage lagoon dries, one of them dries out, and then you dig it up and send it to landfill, and we don't have a landfill operating here, so it must go to Kaiser Meadows or somewhere. So that includes trucking and emissions, and it's all crazy. Feasibility. Everything we do is modular, scalable, and adoptable. We can take anything, including paper, and put it in the digester. So the infrastructure includes digesters and biogas collection, biogas treatment and upgrading, and power generation if that's what we're going to do. But we think that powering vehicles with the small amount of gas that you have is a much better use of the gas. There is no hazardous waste. The only thing that could be, that is waste, is the the absorbent that's used to take the hydrogen sulfide out of the gas, but that is easily dealt with, and it's not large, and Schlumberger deals with that. Everything we do is built to what ASME standards. ASME is the American Association of Mechanical Engineers, and that is the oil industry standard. There are some companies out there that are assembling pieces together, but they're not being built to ASME standards and CSA B51. This is a picture which Bill just put together, which talks about where the pieces go. And the digester, which is that round building, is kind of large. But basically, we have the people at the dump, sorry about that, have told us that they have about 3,500 tons of organic waste a year, and that's not a lot. The digester would be 6 meters in diameter, which is about this big. So this diagram just shows the process. Here we are. So the input, based on the information that I got last week, is 3,250 tons a year. And to make that work, we have to have 1,625 cubic meters of water. And we will generate 245,000 cubic meters of biogas. And some of that's going to be biomethane, and some of it's going to be carbon dioxide. And we'll have 3,185 tons of liquid fertilizer. So what are we getting rid of? We're going to offset 500 tons a year of carbon, 355 tons of CO2. There are some revenue streams here, but I think that we have to have more information before we can be anywhere near specific. So here's the way to do it. The total investment will be determined because we don't have enough information. It's got a 2 to 3 year payback. You can buy it, and we'll build it, and we'll put it in for you. But there's another way to do this, and we'll buy it, we'll build it, we'll own it, and we'll put it in. You help us get regulatory approval and give us some real estate, not a lot, on the property. We'll get rid of those two great big fabric buildings and the smell that goes with them. They're constantly deteriorating because it's a caustic environment. And you agree, or somebody agrees, to take the output of the biomethane, if that's what we're, if we're using it to power gas, to power vehicles. I'm going to reiterate. Sorry, it's early in the morning for me. I'm retired. To reiterate, there are three waste streams: green bin compost, septic waste, and sewage sludge. And that's an opportunity to do something really significant with greenhouse gases by totally eliminating methane and CO2 emissions, totally. In doing so, we can create enough pure methane to power most of the vehicles in the municipal fleets and the buses used by Lunenburg County Wheels and some of GE's garbage trucks. And in doing so, we'll reduce the operating cost of the facility and just about eliminate the smell. And we can do this at no cost to you, zero. If this green approach to an expensive and growing waste problem is appealing to you, the next step is for you to agree to move forward and give us access to the details of the organic waste input streams from the recycling facility. And based on that information, we'll create a detailed plan of the possible biogas output of the plant and its cost. And with that, we can have a further discussion to map out a way forward. That's it. I hope that wasn't more than 15 minutes.
No, you were basically right on time, Arthur. We do have some councillors that would like to ask you questions.
Sure.
We'll start with Councillor Bell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to direct a question to Mr. Sigora through you, please.
And
I have a question for you. I thought I heard you say that a company can convert a garbage truck so that it runs on methane product that you produce. I think that's, you refer to it as methane. I ask this because some of our councillors wanted our next tender document for garbage pickup operations to include electric trucks. What we have sort of found out, that might be a very costly way to go. But if we could still eliminate diesel and have these trucks run on methane, can you give me an example where this was ever done? And if so, is this a reasonable cost to change a truck over? Like if we went to GE Trucking and asked them to switch, is this something that's a ridiculous cost, or can it be done?
Thank you for your question. I have an article here. I have some articles here. I have handouts for everybody about vehicles. And this one about refuse fleets says that 2/3 of all the refuse vehicles purchased in the last 5 years in Canada run on compressed natural gas. Now, in Western Canada, well, and up to Quebec anyway, I guess that's Western Canada, natural gas comes out of a pipeline and it's quite easy to pump into vehicles. Here, because we don't have natural gas pipelines, we'd have to find other means, and biogas is one of them. But the cost of a conversion is about $2,800 for a smaller vehicle and $8,000 for a big diesel truck. Most of the truck manufacturers now make specialized natural gas engines. But conversion is done all the time. And I don't know how we do these handouts. How do we do handouts?
We have another question with Council Hubley. We have you have intrigued our council. We have quite a list of people here who want to ask you questions.
Oh, good.
Awesome. Hi, how are you?
Hi, I'm fine. How are you?
Good. I think this is a great idea, and zero cost sounds even better to me. Councillor Bell did ask a question. I'm just wondering, do you have a town or a city that's currently using your equipment, and can you tell me which town or city it is
In Canada, no.
Okay.
My business partner lives in Mexico. His wife runs the biggest human transportation company in the state of Veracruz, which is owned by her mother and her uncle. Her uncle has a ranch with 10,000 head of cattle on it. Bill is in the process, Bill and Jessica are in the process of convincing her uncle, Mr. Cadena, to use his cattle to power their buses. Bill is still designing oil and gas processing equipment. He started doing this 3 years ago. We're going to a conference, the European Biogas Conference in Brussels in June, but we haven't built any equipment so far. But I have some pictures, which you can pass those, you can look at them and pass them around.
Excellent.
We have built so much oil and gas processing equipment around the world that this is just another gas plant. And those are some pictures of some equipment that we've built.
Thank you.
So I think that our qualifications for building gas processing equipment are established. This is just, as I said, another piece of gas processing equipment.
Thank you very much.
Councillor DeLong?
Good morning. Hello. My question was also around conversion of the vehicles, which you've already answered. How many GHGs would this divert from just entering the atmosphere?
I think it's about 500 tons a year.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Councillor Haysom.
Hi. Nice to see you. I have a lot of questions, but I'm going to try and keep them somewhat short. I was really, really interested to read this, and anything that sort of focuses on circularity is of great interest to me. And some of the questions I had you did answer in your presentation have also been posed by other councillors. But some of the questions that I do have, I love the scalability and the fact that it's modular. I think that's hugely important and will be as you're sort of forward thinking. I guess my questions are about sort of if you've done or are aware of information around life cycle analysis and so what the impacts are of building and sort of manufacturing and running a modular facility versus what the offset is. And specifically, you mentioned water usage, and is there any recovery for any of that water usage? Because, of course, that's a resource as well.
Okay. I have to answer the last question first. In order to make this work in an anaerobic digester, you have to make it into a liquid. So the water makes it into a liquid, and then the liquid is processed, and then liquid fertilizer is the output. And there is some dry output, which can be used as bedding or also as fertilizer. So there's no waste at all. So the water, we could draw the water out of the lake. The lake that I understand the sewage septic bed thing overflowed into a few years ago. Our whole goal is to be as environmentally conscious as possible, and to have no waste at all. Go ahead. I didn't answer your first question, and I can't remember.
Just if there was a life cycle analysis or an intention to perform one, that was
a life cycle analysis of the equipment.
Yeah,
sure. We haven't done that yet because, of course, this is the very early stage. I'm just here to see if you're interested. Then we can move on to the next stage and the stage after that. But the timeline to get this up and going is not that long compared to many other things in this world.
So if I could, for the supplementary question, was just about, you know, you sort of referenced a market for liquid CO2 and these things. So that exists and that's easily accessible?
Yes. Okay. When you start researching a lot of things to do with the environment, you find that North America is like in the doldrums. All of this is well established in Europe. Bill lived in Italy. Bill and Jessica lived in Italy for 3.5 years in northern Italy. And in the commune that they lived in, which I think had 1,600 people, the small grocery store had covered parking places with solar panels on top. So when you went to the grocery store, you could plug in your car and get it charged. I mean, that idea is not a North American idea. So we're just trying to do a little bit of what Europe, we're trying to catch up. And it's not that hard. The will has to be there, though. So we're trying to take the will away, increase your will by reducing the cost to zero. And that always makes it a little easier.
We have some more questions. Councillor Staton.
Thank you. My questions mostly were answered by other councillors' questions. And I just want to know if there was another location this was working in, and you indicated maybe Europe was someplace where it was working.
Also British Columbia. Fortis,
okay.
Which is, I believe, a Newfoundland company, has a very large presence in the pipeline industry in British Columbia, and in one of the articles that I handed out, it's from a Fortis publication, and Fortis refers to RNG as some of the gas that they're providing to power vehicles, and RNG is replaceable natural gas, so they're getting it from landfills. I was also in Chatham, Ontario a few months ago, and they have a landfill that must be 200 feet high and several thousand feet long. And Enbridge was laying a 4-inch pipeline between their pipeline and this landfill, and some huge American company was building a gigantic plant to harvest the methane that's coming out of the landfill. So that's a little different from anaerobic digestion, because we're only talking right now about processing the organic waste. Methane comes out of landfills also, and I know nothing about that. But you have a capped landfill. I'm sure the methane is coming from somewhere. And I'd just like also say that all of those windrows of compost are venting methane into the, and CO2 into the atmosphere. That's not what we want to do.
No, we're aware of that. And I just
I'm sure you are.
Yeah. You said there's a timeline. So is this application based on grants?
No.
Okay, that's why I wondered why there was a timeline. What are they?
I don't know anything about grants. I've never gotten one. This is like business. You know, we can make money doing this. You don't have to do anything. We'll sell the gas. Oh, yeah, I didn't say this. How do we make money? If we produce whatever it is in so many tons of methane gas to power, say, power vehicles, then we would put a filling station at the dump. The filling stations have evolved to the point where, you know, it's not like a guy in a hazmat suit and great big gloves dealing with gas. You just plug it in. They do this in Europe. And fill your own vehicle. We would sell the gas to the municipality or somebody else at $1 a liter, which is, you know, if you look at diesel today, it's what, $1.98 or something like that. So it's, you know, if we're producing the gas, we have to make money, but $1 a liter seems to be cheap. It won't go up. I also want to tell you that we did a lot of work in the 16 years that I did this stuff in Pakistan, and 90% of all the small vehicles, like not huge trucks that are diesel, but all the vehicles are 90% of all the vehicles in every major city are powered by compressed natural gas, because they have no refineries in Pakistan, and they don't want to import gas from India. They import diesel from India, but they don't want to import gas from India. So, I think there are 15 million vehicles in the world that are currently powered by compressed natural gas. It's nothing new.
Mayor Bolivar-Getson?
Thank you. I don't know where to start because I've got all these papers scribbled on here. So in these markets served, there are actually digesters in each?
No. Those are the markets that we as a company will serve, or that we as a company have built gas processing equipment for.
Okay.
But that has...
So is there anywhere right now that is using one of these digesters?
Oh, my God, yes.
Okay.
All over the world.
All right. Second question. Commercial vehicle approach, and I recognize that the electric fleet industry for electric vehicles is a long way from being able to deliver on anything that would be cost-effective as well as meet the climate change for this area when it comes to operating them. How does this biogas differ from, I'm hearing a lot on the hydrogen side?
Okay. So
from a trucking industry perspective?
The trucking industry is experimenting with hydrogen right now. There's a fleet in British Columbia that's running on hydrogen.
Mm-hmm.
Hydrogen, how long do you have? I think hydrogen is the future and not electric vehicles.
So do
but,
I.
You know, I have gray hair, so who knows when it's going to happen. But compressed natural gas, as I just said, is used all over the world to power vehicles, and it's not new technology. It's the basically the engines that are in the vehicles just burn natural gas. And methane purified to 99.5% is the same as, it's actually better than the natural gas that comes out of the pipeline. So there are conversions that use gas, petrol, and methane gas, or natural gas, and they'll start the vehicle on gasoline or diesel, and then switch over. So you have a gas tank in that type of conversion. So if you run out of natural gas, you just switch. It automatically switches back to gasoline. All of these things have been thought of, not by me, and all of these problems have been solved. But to address your specific questions, I'd like to do that in writing, and I'll do some more research and we can address them. But I think that would be, you know, once there's a statement of interest, we can meet again, or somebody can submit questions, and we can address them in the next stage when we're gathering information.
So how does this differ from the biofuel that is currently trying to be, I guess, created at Kaiser Meadows with the system that they have?
I have no idea. What are they doing? I don't know.
Because there is Sustain is the name of the company.
I know nothing about that, but I think that they're making pellets. Are they making pellets?
It's pellets.
I think that they're making pellets into fuel.
But you don't burn those in your car. You know,
but there was a biofuel component to that as well. It wasn't only pellets. It was for a biofuel that they were looking at.
I don't know.
And the other question, and one of the things that they've been challenged with, this has been in the ongoing for probably 10, 15 years trying to get this off the ground in Kaiser Meadows, is the contamination of the product when they receive it. And our compost isn't as pure as we would like to see our compost, and people are still putting things in compost that creates challenges for sorting and for this type of fuel. And I'm wondering what percentage of contamination would be acceptable to be able to move forward, mm-hmm. or how would you screen out those products that shouldn't be in there?
Strangely enough, I had a long conversation with Bill last night about this, and I said, to start with, we used to have these biodegradable plastic bags that the people at the mm-hmm. recycling facility decided they didn't like because they weren't breaking down properly. And Bill said they're in Europe, they have biodegradable plastic bags that are approved by the government that everybody uses. And the next step is what would happen if somebody put a normal plastic bag, you know, a garbage bag, in the garbage, which I'm sure that never happens. And he said it doesn't matter because everything gets chopped up and macerated, and we're not getting the gas. Sorry, the byproduct after you produce the gas has nothing to do with producing the gas. So the byproduct is fertilizer, liquid fertilizer, mm-hmm. and if there are little tiny bits of plastic in the liquid fertilizers, who cares? But the percentage of stuff that should not be in the compost will not make any difference to the process. Mm-hmm. I think that's your question.
Yeah. So yeah. I guess my final comment would be that I think that this presentation should go to the Municipal Joint Services Board, where we are partners with the Town of Mahone Bay, and the Town of Bridgewater and the District of Lunenburg are partners. Right. And as presenting, and I would ask you to reach out to our Chief Operating Officer there to get it on an agenda for everyone to
sure.
hear the
how
same
often,
presentation.
How often do they meet?
They meet monthly.
Oh, cool.
Usually there's a break in there somewhere, but typically monthly.
And who would I be talking to get this?
Leslie McFarlane.
Okay.
Leslie McFarlane. Would be the name. But we can get you that contact information.
That would be fabulous.
We do have four more people, but two of them have not asked questions yet. Would you be open to at least yours has been answered? And Councillor Wynot, what about yours?
I've known Arthur for at least almost 50 years, so that's kind of scary. Anyway, he hasn't steered me wrong yet. I really like the presentation, but can wood chips be used in this process?
Anything that, yeah, sure.
That's great.
The idea is if we could use, there are several microbreweries in the area, and if we could get their waste, if we could get all of the used cooking fat from all the restaurants, that would be great. Anything can break down that's organic, we can use. And, if you want to throw paper in there instead of sending it to recycling, that's fine. We won't get much, but it adds to the volume. And, wood chips, I think, would work. I can't tell you for sure, but I'd have to find out. Anything that's organic will work.
Councillor Bell.
Thank you. I really like what I'm hearing here. It seems positive. Our current organic waste compost operation is not the newest technology. And we have spent money on it over the years trying to keep from doing a major overhaul. And we do haul a lot of products to Kaiser Meadows to a similar operation, which was mentioned here, Sustain. But I often wonder, when we operate a 18-wheel diesel truck, I think they do 4 trips a day from our site to Kaiser Meadows, how big of a carbon footprint are we doing to take product to Sustain when we have opportunity to process it on our own property? We could eliminate that cost. So I see eliminating the cost, eliminating all the diesel fuel being left out. There's a lot of advantages to just looking at your plan. And I'm encouraged by what I hear, and I would like to see the next phase of your presentation.
Thank you very much. I look forward to doing this more. Maybe we can even drag Bill here before we get to the end of this process. This is a very small plant. It's sort of the nature of a pilot plant. I don't think there's another company in the world that would touch it because it's so small. But we can remotely monitor it from anywhere in the world, and we can get it tuned up to work as brilliantly as it could possibly work.
We have one more final question, if you're open to it. Councillor Haysom.
It was mostly answered. It was about maybe stability of the cost of the methane fuel once it's produced, because stability of cost is sort of equally as important as cost.
Yes, of course. And, everybody in this room would love to have stability of cost. I think that if we signed a final agreement, in that agreement would be the cost set out for 10 years.
Are there any further questions from the committee? Seeing none, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And please do get a hold of our of Leslie at the MJSB, please. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and I'm sorry to have exceeded my 15 minutes.
No, that's fine. Thank you. Yeah. Barry Zwicker, are you prepared to do your presentation now? It's a little bit earlier than what is on our schedule, but if you're open. What? Yeah.
First, I'd like to thank Madam Mayor and the councilors for giving me the opportunity and the time to make this presentation. And also thanks to Tina and Joanne for helping me on the technical side of things. I'd like to start off by presenting a bit of a scenario. You had two houses side by side and the same size lot and two residents in each of the houses. One house was a one-story bungalow with vinyl siding. The other house is a two-story house with stone siding. And the implication of, well, also the two-story house would have double the tax assessment. The connection with that scenario to, for example, road maintenance is kind of hard to draw, but the only way I can figure it out is if the two-story house were to travel on a municipal road, it would do double the damage that the one-story bungalow would do. And, of course, a two-story house won't be able to travel on a public road. If you look at the first page in the handout, which is the expenses for modal, I've added a column on the right-hand side there that's in red and how it relates to property assessments. So, for example, education, which is $9 million,
Barry, just hold a second. So within your agenda, there is a copy of the documents that he's referring to. Go ahead.
Okay.
Thank you.
There's $9 million for education. And I don't know how that's related to property assessments. Next line is the assessment services, which we'll skip over that one. Next line is corrections. I don't know how that's related to assessment of properties. Public housing, regional library, RCMP, total roads and streets, $1.3 million, garbage collection and on-site waste services. So to me, there's no relationship between any of those items and assessment by PVSC of the properties. The next page is a summary of comments that were made by Jeff Cadell, who is assistant director of PVSC, on January the 19th of this year. He says that the consumer price index is provided by the province to PVSC each year. This is used as a limit for assessment increases for eligible properties. New construction is not eligible. If there's been new construction occurred on a property during 2023, that portion of the value attributed to the new construction would not be capped, so owners might see an increase larger than the 3.2%. So each year, PVSC calculates both a market value assessment and a cap assessment for eligible residential properties. The lesser of the two, which is what the municipality uses to calculate the taxes for that property. This is an old, old system, property taxes. And it's become overly complicated. So what I'm suggesting is that we take advantage of the technology today. We have computers, which they didn't have back in the early days when property taxes were started. And we have a computer system in Ottawa run by CRA. And so I'm suggesting that a municipality would submit a number, which would be the annual amount that's previously collected as a property tax, in this case $28 million. And that number, by the way, could be any number at all that the municipality wants to put in their budget. They wouldn't have to wait for assessments. They just pick a number of course, you got to realize that the people within the municipality would be aware of the budget and whether it's going up or down, but that number would be selected as part of your budget. No implications as from assessments or anything else. And then CRA would do a one-time modification of their tax software. It would add a field to the address on the income T1 form for municipality. So it would identify which municipality the tax return was coming from. Secondly, it would total all the net income within the municipality. It would divide the, in this case, $28 million by the total net income and come up with a percentage. I'm using as an example 3.8%. Then it would multiply the net income on each tax return by that municipal or by that percentage, and that would determine a municipal surtax. It would total the municipal surtaxes, which mathematically would equal the $28 million, and transfer that funds back to the municipality. Once the software was modified, the annual cost would be the provision of one number, which would be the $28 million in this case, to CRA, maybe one email, and the same amount transferred back to the municipality as maybe an electronic transfer. Benefits would be cost savings. This is on top of page 4A. $25 million cost savings per year for Nova Scotia. $18 million, this is not the municipality, this is for the province. $18 million for assessments by PVSC and possibly another $8 million by municipal staff to figure out what the tax rate should be. PVSC produces 650,000 assessments in municipalities and creates, and the municipalities create double that since the taxes are collected twice a year. There'd be no setting of tax rates, no processing of payments, and no payment chasing. Also mentioned that those 650,000 assessments, a lot of them, and I don't have any numbers on this, but would be woodlots. And I have quite a few woodlots. I get an assessment. I don't know why, because I pay 25 cents an acre. Better relation to ability to pay. When was the last time you saw a house go for a walk in the park? Buildings don't generate garbage. Use roads, take the bus, or skate at rinks. How are assessments related to road maintenance? Federal and provincial governments use income as a reflection of ability to pay. So why not municipalities? A wider tax base. All income earners, which are the users, the actual users of municipal services, would help pay, not just property owners. Improvement to the provincial economy. Taxing property values is a disincentive for owners to improve their properties, hampering material sales and employment. I maybe should mention I have 4 Studebakers, and I'd like to have a nice garage to put them in. One thing that's prevented me from doing it is property taxes. No resources wasted on assessment conflicts. There'd be no assessments, no caps, no appeals, no evictions due to property taxes. On the next page, a bunch of numbers. I tried to do a bit of a simulation of the existing system, which is across the top of the page, based on assessments, and then down below is based on municipal service users. So if we look at the top of the page, under the first column, there's an A in brackets there. Which
just
is the,
so that you know, Barry, you have 5 minutes left.
Right, which is an annual-based average, page 16 of the budget. And so it's $211,000, and the taxes, property tax, and that would be $1,700. And then I continue on 400 and 500 and 800 and so on. Then the bottom of the page is what I'd be proposing. So if you take the $28,000, or $28 million rather, and 20,000 net income returns times $40,000 average net income would be $800,000. So like on a previous page, you divide the 28,000 by 800,000 and come up with a budget income ratio of 3.57%. So for example, on the column one, there's a $20,000 net income times the 3.57%, which would be $713, which is considerably less than the column up above. Next item, $40,000 would be $1,400, which is less than half of the income on the existing system. So I'll skip ahead. Previous correspondence I've had with this is I sent an email to CRA back in 2018, a letter from Jeff Reagan to Diane Boutelier, Minister of National Revenue, in charge of CRA, or was, she's no longer there. And then a letter from Diane Boutelier back to the Minister of National Revenue, or back to Jeff Reagan, rather, stating that the municipal and provincial government should make the proposal to CRA, not a nobody like me. And then in 2023, a letter from Alan McMaster, Nova Scotia Finance Minister and Treasury Board, and I've attached that letter on the next page. And down the bottom right-hand corner, I was pleased to see that he's quite interested and says that he'll do some exploring, reach back to me on the upcoming months. I haven't heard back from him. I'm not surprised because he's got a lot on his plate. And that's about it.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions? Mayor Bolliver-Getson?
Thank you for your presentation. And I guess one of the things that municipalities through the FCM and the NSFM have been looking for is alternate ways to generate revenue, because the property tax system, everyone recognizes, is not that vehicle. But it's the vehicle under the MGA that the municipalities have been dealt with to do that. So definitely an interesting presentation, and would like to go through it more thoroughly.
Right. Are there any other questions? No? Thank you very much.
I just want to address
Mayor.
I'm not expecting Modal to have this in place by the end of the week. My intention is to go to make the presentation to as many municipalities as I can. And then I would hope that if any municipality is interested in pursuing this any further, and first question, which I tried to find out by contacting CRA, was how much they would charge us to modify their software. If it was $50 million, we'd have a three-year payoff. I don't have any idea if it would be $10 million or $50 million or what it would be. And so all I'm hoping for is maybe if you could reply to our provincial minister of finance if you want to pursue this or find out more about it or how much CRA would charge to do this, that would be a good start.
Thank you very much. You've certainly given us some things to think about, and we appreciate you taking the time to come in here this morning. Thank you very much.
Appreciate it.
Thank you. We're going to take a 10-minute break.